Seasons change. Some people never do, 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 do. You smell like do, do,
do, do, do, do. You smell like do, do, yeah. Ooh, you smell like doo-doo. You smell like shit.
Maybe I should.
Ooh, you smell like
Ooh, you doo-doo. Smell like shit. You smell like hot garbage from the fire straight to my nose.
Hey. Nose.
Oh, zip that zipper.
Zip that zip.
I know that was probably luggage, but I like to imagine that was your pants.
Zip, zip, zip. It's like a circular zipper on my pants.
Yes. You have to do a 360 rotation of zip.
It goes like around my shoulder.
Welcome to Skate Tracks. This is episode 51. I'm Alan, and I'm joined on this ship, this living ship, called life. With my best friend, Magellan.
Aww.
Aww. This week, we're going to be discussing the whole show.
This week, we're going to be disgusting.
This week, we're going to be disgusting. It's going to get real raunchy, real naughty, and there's going to be a lot of slips and slides, but we're going to get through it.
So strap in.
So just Coker as strap in for strap a fun show. In. It's the Skate Chat series recap. It's the Skate Chat series finale, if you will. And we made it. It was March of 2015 when we first recorded our first one of these, and here we are. And instead of doing a traditional, although we're calling it a series recap, or we've been calling it that, it's going to be more of just sort of a series retrospective, because there isn't much to recap. Y'all have watched the show, I would assume, and the Peacekeeper Wars, hopefully, because it's pretty good. And we're going to talk about that, obviously, but I think we agreed it's kind of more fun for us if we just kind of use this show to break down the stuff that we wanted to talk about with Farscape that we haven't already brought up. So just sort of the extra thoughts that were rolling around in our head that we're building and kind of coming to a head by the very end. We have a lot of those, actually.
We think a lot.
We really... That's the thing about podcasting at the end of the day, is it's a lot of like overthinking things and then trying to suss them out via words. And so that is what we're doing right here. And It's been a fun adventure. So let's get right into it. Let's talk about that fun adventure.
Let's just Farscape. Dive right straight.
Farscape.
You know the phrase people say, dive right straight.
Dive right straight. No, I dive right gay. Come on. Whoa. That doesn't work unless you've heard the term dive right straight. But anyways, so let's kick off our first segment. And I think what we haven't gotten a chance to really do so far with the show is break down each season in terms of what it's about to us and what it felt like as a whole. Because, you know, let's start with season one. We have season one. We got John Crane. He's coming into space. He's a pilot and he's a space guy and he's meeting all these weird aliens. Season one of Farscape is like, here is the sci-fi show that you think this is. It is an accident happened in space and we're running away, you know, and it is the show about the weird aliens that run away.
Yeah, these are my kooky friends. This is a kooky place. Everything's kooky.
There's some rescue missions. There's some weird alien stuff. And then they kind of like turn the knob up a little bit with an episode called A Human Reaction. And you're like, this show is a little bit smarter. Yeah, a little big boy. This show is much smarter than it initially made itself out to be. And they're clearly giving care to the idea of humans in space and paying lip service to the fact that that's crazy. Like what is it like for humans in space, and what would it be like if aliens came to Earth, and how are those things different? There's like smart aspects to it, but at its worst, season one of Farscape to me felt like a little better than like a high school play, but a little bit worse than like traditional Hollywood. And that's my problem, is those are the episodes that I feel bad recommending to people, because I'm like, oh, they're gonna be bored, or they're gonna think this whole show is like this, and it's not, and that makes me sad. So yeah, I'm curious what you think about them.
Well, I think season one benefits from starting really strong and ending really strong. And so you can, there are some shows where like the pilot is abysmal, or it's just like the first few episodes are just going to be bad, or they're just, I mean, really when people say the beginning of a show is bad, they either mean that it's objectively not good or that it's just not an accurate representation of what the rest of the show is going to look like. And I think the premiere of Farscape is representative to a certain extent of what the show is going to be about. Because even though it's like kind of roughshod and not fully developed, Rigel still farts helium in that episode. You know? Like,
yeah.
We still, Aaron's son and John Crichton still kind of eye each other and like want to bone down. You and get
translator microbes gonna, are there, you know?
Yeah. You get a taste for the show. And there are, and then there's a stretch of episodes that are just not great and not very memorable. But like when, I mean, we watched it and loved it pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah.
The second episode that we watched, which they were out of order, but the second one that we watched, we got a ton out of it thematically. And it was a stupid Bugs on the Ship episode.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think there's like, even from the very beginning, there's a lot of heart in those episodes. And there's a way to guide somebody who, if you're worried, like, I don't know if this person's going to like Farscape, I think there's, you can guide them to certain tentpole episodes in season one that are going to hook them. Like, I feel confident in that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, show them Premiere and PK Tech Girl and The Flax and A Human Reaction. And, like, you got a show. Like, they get it. And then maybe you can sprinkle in some other ones. But there's a backbone in that season that's really fun and got us to fall in love with it.
It's a sort of like underdog season where it's just like, oh, the stuff that works well is like amazing. And it's like, wow, they really get it. Like the concept of Lux and Hyper Age is introduced. The translator micros are introduced in that season. They have a couple of weird on-planet episodes. Like there's like seeds of stuff that's going to get really, really momentously interesting, if you will. Like, wow, like I have thought so much about these things that were, like I said, planted in season one. So it's impossible to give season one an entirely bad rap. I don't think that's
fair.
Yeah,
there's just the feeling, there's a feeling of like, yeah, we're going places.
Yeah.
This thing's got legs.
It's got legs just like CG Rigel in season one had legs. Oof. So moving on, season two is a weird season because I think based on having looked at the episode list just a couple minutes ago, season two for me definitely felt like they had built up the scale and were like, okay, so we have our chess pieces here and we're going to like take them places. We're going to do some weird on planet stuff, some really weird stuff. We're going to introduce our best villain. We kind of bust our load very early. And we're going to start hinting at stuff in terms of like John's psyche and start messing up these characters in really interesting ways and learning about who they really are across the board. It's season two. It's the like weird one. And I don't have that many episodes from it that I remember, but the ones that I do are really good. Like I love those ones.
Yeah.
I'm curious what you thought of it. It's odd because
the sin of season one, if sin is a word that I can use, and I'm going to use it, and you can ask me not to if you want, but the sin of season one in my mind is just they didn't know fully what they were doing yet, so there's some clumsiness is what I would say. Season two, the sin is, for lack of a better word, flatness. There's, because they had all the pieces should be there. At this point, they had episodes in season one that built the Aaron John relationship step by step so that there has been a progression in that relationship. We understand its trajectory and we can kind of pull from it. That's there. We have John and Dargo's friendship. We have Scorpius as a character who's introduced at the end of season one, but then just taken out of the show for half of the season, like not used.
Right.
And the beginning of season two is John, Aaron, and Dargo are just fighting with each other for no reason. They're just bickering with each other. And then we get some episodes that kind of, I don't know, because there are episodes in season two that are trying to drive at building on the character foundations that were established in season one. Like taking the stone, for example.
Yeah.
Is an episode that's trying to say there's John and Chiana, there's this relationship, and we want to explore that a little more. And then there's the way we weren't, which is like Aaron and Pilot. So there's some attention that's being paid to trying to build episodes around relationships, but that makes the episodes like My Three Crichtons much more egregious, or Picture If You Will much more egregious, because it's like we should not have to do this shit anymore. So flatness is not the word for that. Flatness is the word for like, look at the princess, where season two also had a lot of episodes that were just like,
fine.
And then a couple stinkers and a couple like, you did it. That was cool. But like Vitas Mortis, the one where Dargo has the old lady who gets young and they bone a lot, is like, whoa, did I dream that episode? I don't remember that one. Or like Dream a Little Dream, or Beware of Dog. I literally fell asleep in the middle of it. Like, it's just like, ugh. There's just episodes that are kind of like, I don't really remember that one very well.
I think that season two was the growing pains of Farscape. And that's part of why some of it isn't very memorable. Because there was like
a great term for it.
It cycled a lot between like absolute bangers and like amazing, wonderful episodes like Out of Their Minds and Won't Get Fooled Again and Ugly Truth and that kind of stuff. And Wait, We Weren't. Well, actually, Ugly Truth is not great. But so, and then there's like a couple of like middling episodes, and then there's like terrible episodes. And it's like, this is all in the same season. And in a way, that is also Farscape. Is Farscape is not, in our opinion, as you can see from the show, a universally great piece of work. It is a universally interesting work and a work of art, but I can't tell you that this is a perfect show. I still am just like the sort of like reluctant to call popular things the best kind of person. I still like to say that this is now one of my favorite shows. Even though it's kind of rough, but I think that roughness makes it what it is. That's the magic of Farscape.
What would you call a perfect show?
That's the thing, is I don't feel comfortable calling anything a perfect show. But I'm trying to get away from the word favorite also. Because this could show, I could totally say, like, top three favorites. And that totally puts into account its flaws, its season two nonsense, you know, its way it doesn't handle women very well, and way it handles sexual assault. Like, all that stuff is bunched in there, why I can't, you know, say it's 100% recommended, but I love it. It's the same reason I love Lost. Lost is terrible for huge chunks of it. But then it also like changed the way I thought about a lot of things and was like formative for me. So
that's true.
I think I just am the kind of person that likes rough shows, middle, like shows that go off highs and lows. And season two is like peak high and low Farscape.
Definitely.
Now then, season three, before you get a little bit more serious, this is the sexy season. This is the weird one. This is when Farscape was like, we're going there. We're going all the way there. Here's Harvey. Here's the full Scorpius stuff. You know, this. Here's the choice. So, again, not a perfect season. Of course not. I am going to say, just kind of to say a little bit early, I think it's my favorite season because of the weird rough patches. But it is more consistently interesting than any other season of Farscape. And it has some of the greatest character moments and character pairings. We talk about the Whedon test a lot that this show has ever seen. And I don't know. It's just, it's like the most, this so, I don't think I hate, do I hate a single episode in season three, Magellan? I don't think I do. I don't think there's a single one that I actively hate.
You certainly must. There must be. I'm skimming them and I don't really see one, but there must be.
No, I'm looking and I don't hate a single one. There's no like Garbo episode.
So that's what's beautiful about season three, is it is showing us what kind of show Farscape can be that no other show can be. Because it's going for the bold, I mean, the elephant in the room here is it's going for the bold narrative choice of cloning its protagonist and putting its protagonist in two different places at once, which is crazy. Like that's something that only this show would be able to pull off and do in a way that's responsible and resonant and tragic and hopeful, like all in one package. And at the same time, being able to throw in episodes like Scratch and Sniff, where it's a weird Guy Ritchie film. So I think, or Revenging Angel, where it's like a cartoon. Like, you know, they took more liberties in this season with both the season as a piece of art and the episode as a distinct piece of art. Because I think in past seasons, the episode was more about, like, what's the thing that they're going to fight this week? Or where are they going to go? And it was kind of a more passing, familiar sci-fi way of approaching single episodes. But season three, we see that it's at least shifting in its sensibility a little bit to something that's more like, we could make this one really weird.
Yeah, exactly. I think my sort of final treatise on why season three is best Farscape is this. Seasons one and two are the, like, we're trying to do weird Star Trek, you know, or like weird ensemble sci-fi. Season three is where they said, no, frel genre. We're doing a, like, single character focused tragedy, which in The Choice, we have a time travel episode in different destinations. We got horror. We have like more dog with two bones is its own whole beast. Green-Eyed Monster has a little bit of Shakespeare. Meltdown, a little bit more of Shakespeare. Revenging Angel, a cartoon, scratch and sniff, a heist film. Like, none of these are things that you see just in sci-fi.
Yeah.
And it really, it stretches the boundaries of what is Farscape. And it kind of like extends them into the horizon and points at the stars and says, that's something weird that no show like this has ever done. We're just going to do it. And you're going to buy into it and it's going to work and you're going to love it. And because of these characters, mm-hmm. we're built on the strength of seasons 1 and 2. And now we can play with them because the show is in a lot of ways also just about playing with weird genre trappings. And when yeah. making its characters go through weird like character transformations and physical transformations, of course.
Right.
So that's what season 3 is to me. It's the season where they finally got to play and expand what this show completely and holistically is. I love it. It's a perfect season. What?
Don't agree with that part, but...
Oh, wow. Season 4. The final season of Farscape. It's pretty dang good. It is... a season where it took them a little bit too long to kind of find their footing again. Yeah. But the thing with that is that you cannot, this is the season of the show that you can no longer disassociate from the fact that they were canceled right. and that they didn't know they were not going to get another one. This shouldn't have, they never wrote the beginning of this season to be the final season. That's unfair to say these episodes, mm-hmm. but they are still bad. They would have been bad before. They're bad now. The coup by Clam, etc. A prefect murder, you know, those ones. But once it gets going, once it finally like wakes itself up and goes, hey, Farscape, this is it. This is all you have left. It hits those heights again and it kind of stays up there for a while and builds and builds.
I mean, the back half of this season, like there's such a sharp fissure in quality between Coup by Clam and Unrealized Reality.
Yeah.
Where now Farscape has coalesced into the show it can be and will be, and here we go. This is it. Like, from now, episode 11 of the season, until pretty much straight through to the end, we're doing Farscape. We're doing peak Farscape. We're rocking it, and it's fun and crazy. But the first half is kind of like, what's going on? I think that's a great point about you cannot separate season 4 from the idea of them being canceled, because I think about season 3 and how it's inventive and it's, you know, they're experimenting, they're moving into different genres, figuring out like, okay, we have our characters, we have the themes that we want to work with, and now we can play with genre and we can play with our presentation and we can move away from the way that a show like Star Trek looks and acts. And it's more about Farscape coming from Farscape instead of Farscape coming from somewhere else. Sure, great. I think season 3 was figuring that out, and I did not consistently love season 3 maybe as much as you did. I think in retrospect, the two Johns arc did not stay with me the way that I wanted it to. And so I really would have loved to see that inventive spirit from season 3 carried into a season 4 that has something after it. Like a season 4 that can be another contained season and not the last season.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they were done developing, playing with the show and how the show works.
Precisely. For so much of the fan base, from the comments that we've received, I've come to understand that for some people, that Farscape is not the weird sci-fi show with the puppets, which is what it was to us when we started. It's the one of the best, potentially best sci-fi shows that was canceled before its time. And that was what it was, and that is what it is almost 20 years later for people. Or it's just that unfairness and that cruelty of, you took this beautiful thing away from us. And yeah, ultimately season 4 is the culmination of that and makes it hurt all the more when you watch the end of that finale. And you see them turn into Dippin' Dots, and you're like, this is not. No matter how much we agreed that there's a finality that's a good finality to that, there's 0% chance that that's what they wanted. That is no way, shape, or form the way that show needed was going to end. Which, in relation to that, we got Peacekeeper Wars. You can hear our commentary and talk about that. We liked it. I think that's a good epilogue. I agree with the general consensus, which is that it's solid. It kind of rushes through stuff. It feels like it's trying to be a season five sometimes, in that it feels like a lot of long episodes. But once it gets cranking, like, by the time it's about the, like, whole show and not just about, like, John and Scorpius or anything, when it's about, like, nuclear war, when it gets to that scale, there's nothing like it in the rest of Farscape. And it achieves something that the rest of the show never did. And I respect it for that a lot. Mm-hmm. So let's rank them, Magellan. How do you rank these seasons?
Let's rank them. You might disagree. In fact, you will disagree, and that's the beauty of life. I think my number one is season four. Number two is season one. Number three is season three. And number four is season two.
I respect
that. 4-1-3-2.
I respect that a lot. Oh, man. I get it. Like, I totally get it. And I really appreciate that you kept one up there. I think that it's great that one got its say. But I think I'm going to... Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to not put it that high up is what I was going to say.
Yeah. I think for me, season four for me is at the top simply because of how cohesive the backstretch felt, even with dips into episodes like Mental as Anything, where it's like, now we're training with a dude to be good at
Peter Frampton,
whatever this is. It still had those weird moments, but like the We're So Screwed trilogy, the Constellation of Doubt, Kansas, like all of that, bad timing, it all kind of worked together to create a final chapter that felt like a full chapter. And so that is what I'm putting first. And the rest of this stuff, like every season has bad episodes and has a bad half. It's just some seasons have it scattered throughout, like season one does. So season four is at the top because of that. Season one is second just because like I fell in love with that show during season one. And their episodes, like even the bad episodes from season one, I think of fondly because I was still experiencing the show and still learning new things about it, even in the episodes that were not that great. And then three is better than two.
Yeah.
That's how that goes.
A little bit objective right there. Yeah. So I'm just going to say, let's lock it in at 3-4-1-2 is my ranking of the seasons from best to worst.
Okay.
Or best to least best. How about that? Because there's just Out of Their Minds is one of those season two episodes that it's like, no, don't hurt that cute body swapping episodes. It's so fun. I rewatched it recently, man. I don't know if I told you this, but I had a fun rewatch of Out of Their Minds, and it was like,
That is a fun episode. I mean, there are a couple episodes in season two that are transcendent, but it's like three or four of them, and then the rest is just. Meh.
Ultimately, it's a numbers game, and this is a good show overall. And I don't think we need to rank PC Rewards because I think it kind of works as a season four part two. It doesn't need to be separate. Speaking of things that we love and that we find wonderful, let's go to our first break and turn it over to our audio commenters who sent in their lovely pieces on why they love Farscape and what it means to them. We're going to start off with Simon, who sent us a very nice clip that we'll play for you right now.
Hi, Alan and Magellan, and fellow Scuppies. I wanted to send you a quick audio note, as you requested, about what Farscape means to me. First up, I'm not an original watcher. Amusingly, during the original run, I inadvertently did what you two did, seeing short but indelible clips of what I'd later learn was Losing Time and the Peacekeeper Wars, and then later watching the series. That being said, at the time of the original run, I was only really watching the Sci-Fi Channel for Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Invisible Man, and Quantum Leap. I'm recording this little audio note on Thanksgiving of 2016, which is the 7th anniversary of my real engagement with Farscape. You see, I moved to Philadelphia in September of 2009 and knew no one else except for my boss. I was lonely and needed an escape from a 5-day weekend of just my thoughts. So remembering the show and those weird things that happened, some alien lady shouting at some space creature and something about a starburst, and then later on a bunch of people and puppets jumping into a terrible CG net, I didn't know what was going on during these scenes, but I was like, you know what, I'm interested enough to see what it is, and sure enough it was on Netflix, so I figured I'd binge it over that 5-day weekend. I obviously enjoyed it, and it helped me settle down a little bit, including getting over a crush. And it's a well that I go back to once in a while if I feel a bit down or I feel like a stranger, a human among aliens. I'm not sure what else to say about my engagement with Farscape. I'm not very loquacious. I've also enjoyed your podcast. I've always felt like writing a comment or sending a tweet, but again, I'm not half as witty or as insightful as the other commenters. Actually, most of my involvement on the Farscape subreddit is removing John Crichton leather vest spam. As a side note, at first, I was told to remove and ban you guys for self-promotion, quote-unquote, but obviously, I chose not to. Alright, I'm not sure what else to say. I'm glad you two have enjoyed one of my absolute favorite series, and I hope that you're glad to know that I've enjoyed your podcast. I look forward to whatever you guys come up with next, and I wish you the best. You can find me on the sidebar of the subreddit. I'm Simon the Cannibal, and on Twitter, I'm at @cannibal_Simon. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you, Simon, for that. That was lovely, really touching, and reminds me a lot of what Farscape was for us, which was just like the thing to do when you wanted to fill a void a little bit. Because it was like, oh, we finished Buffy and we need, like, I want another show. And we finished Twin Peaks, we finished Angel, and we're like, I want something that's like entertaining and weird. And we, you know,
we need another crazy show with a kooky squad.
And boy,
we need it now.
And I need it now. And it's all on Netflix. Bam, bam, yeah. Boom. There's Farscape. So with that, speaking of that kooky squad, let's talk about him. This is our segment on the characters of Farscape. The good, the bad, the ugly, the Strappa, the Bracca. Strappas and Brackas is actually the name of this segment. I just renamed it.
Strappas and Brackas.
We originally were like, let's just talk about the characters. But like, that's the show, fam. That's like the whole cast.
Yeah, were you listening?
Were you listening? I hope you were. It's me, Margaret. There are characters on such a bad joke. God.
I like that you were like in your joke car and then you went like at how much you didn't like your joke.
Yeah, I was like, no, that this is exhaust
fumes. That was the mental image I had.
Yeah. There are characters in the show and moments of character that in the show that we didn't really get to dive right into. Specifically, I mean, we talk ad infinitum about the Whedon test. This idea that you can combine characters in different pairings and have interesting, unique, bespoke interactions.
Well, and the idea, like, if you can have those interactions with any pair, then you have created an effective ensemble.
Yes. So we've talked about that. But there's, like, pairings, and specifically relationship pairings, that we didn't really get to kind of take an eyeglass to, if you will. I'm so bad at idioms. That's, like, my cartoon parody of myself is just I can't do idioms. Who was supposed to kiss that didn't kiss Magellan? Who could have kissed?
Well, let me give you my top three.
Yes.
Who could have kissed that didn't kiss. Coming in at number three, you have Rigel and Shiana.
Wow. Why are you weird? Ew. Sure.
Coming in at number two, Pilot.
Yes.
And Dargo.
Oh, there's stuff there. There's probably fan fiction of that because of the.
I wanted to see
a
lot more Pilot and Dargo.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't get to see a lot of those two interacting.
Well, because by the time Dargo was captain, it was already like, well, we have to captain things to do. Oh, captain, my captain.
Yeah, it was like pretty late in the show that they made that decision. Right. But then I wanted to see, like, what does that mean? Because after the point where Dargo was declared captain, it still felt like John was in charge of everything. There was maybe one moment where John was trying to do something and Dargo was like, I'm the captain. And then Pilot kept calling John commander. Anyway, but like the Pilot-Aaron relationship was so rich and affecting that I wanted to see other people develop relationships with Pilot. But I guess that is what made the Aaron-Pilot thing so affecting, is that she was the only one who really had like a strong relationship with him.
Yeah, and that's from season one. Again, talking about like season one had did some weirdly smart stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Number one, John
and
Bracca.
Ooh, it's potential. There's
a sizzle there.
I like
competitive sizzle.
I like the secret bonus thing about doing the who is supposed to kiss is also we can play with what Whedon tests did they never even attempt that they could have tried out.
Yeah.
Because John and Bracca probably had interesting conversations at some point about like, hey, you feel like you have another guy with a lot of sexual tension too? Yeah? No. Well, did you think about making the move? No? Me neither. Good talk. And then they hug it out and have a beer.
I mean, Brack, I think, was one of our favorite characters because he kind of like emerged. He emerged out of this dude that I think we made fun of for being like really bland and forgettable.
Totally.
The first time that we saw him. And out of nowhere, he became a character who, instead of being bland and forgettable, was like, in our minds, tensely controlling and bottling his passion, right? He's like filled with passion. And John is a character who's like kind of bland, Mr. Everybody, but then becomes explosive and like fails to rein himself in. And so there is a way for those two characters to interact with each other that I think would have been really fascinating. And we get to see that happen through Scorpius, like John's interactions with Scorpius and Brack's interactions with Scorpius. And there is kind of a homoerotic jealousy that Bracca probably felt when it came to Scorpius's fascination with John. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, I want to dig into that a little bit more. I want to see more Bracca. I want to see Bracca get pissed. You know,
see him rip his shirt off and punch a man in the balls.
Yes. I want to see him do all of that. There's a reason he's my favorite boy.
He's the best boy. I think we can agree on that forever.
He's 100% the best.
So I think just because the whole thing with this recap is we don't want to do the stuff we've already done before, I'm going to do no gay pairings, no homosexual pairings, which is weird, right? I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to
uncharted territory.
I think it's not like you choked on your water. Like, oh, God. I love shipping gay characters to be gay together. So I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to really just stretch right now. So here you go.
Yeah.
Number one, Aaron and Bracca.
Interesting. They must have interacted.
They both have peacekeeper backgrounds.
Yeah, I think they talked about that at some point, right? When they were on the... What was the one where they were on the peacekeeper base? That was towards the end of season 3, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I think Aaron and Bracca kind of interacted then, didn't they?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit.
Well, they're both coming from different sides of control in relationships. Like, Aaron has a lot more of the, like, direction, and Bracca's the one taking the directions. So I think that their relationship could blossom that way.
Well, and also there is the kind of foiling of the idea of the consummate peacekeeper, where Bracca is, like, perfect peacekeeper. Both of them were like really perfect peacekeepers who both kind of rebelled in different ways. Because Aaron went totally renegade and became a real person with real person feelings and became a mom.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, totally different. Whereas Bracca shifted his loyalty from the peacekeeper cause to being, you know, the faithful acolyte of Scorpius above all else. So in a way, they both kind of left peacekeeperdom and chose love. And I think maybe we like really love to read in that Bracca is completely in love with Scorpius, but I think it's not a stretch to say that he has undying respect and would like sacrifice himself for Scorpius.
For sure.
You know? So that's a really interesting thing to think about. On the surface, Bracca is like kind of, he's the boy who's following the rules and he's really good at following the rules, but he's really not just a faceless dude following the rules. He has like his agenda and he has passion and devotion to another person.
Yeah, that pairing turned out way better than I anticipated when I BS'd it. Yeah. my next pairing is not good. It's Dargo and Sekozu. Think about it for a minute. So Dargo is all about commitment. He's all about Chiana. He's all about, I want to live on a farm with the people I love and have my sword and my gun and my big beard.
You're trying to sell me a watch.
You got your farm, you got your gun, you got your Rolex. He's all about commitment and about sticking to the people who have kept him safe and have made him happy. Sekozu is not. Sekozu is about choosing the right side, choosing the winning side when it's important and when it's pertinent to her. And I think they could at the very least have an interesting dialogue that we never really got to see, where he's like, oh, it makes, like, I can just imagine them like in the mess hall. You remember how they had like the cool cups or something in season one, like whenever they would eat in the kitchen? They're like sitting in there and he's like, oh, but what do you mean, like, you can just leave for whoever you want? And Sekozu's like, yeah, you just, like, I don't plan on staying here. And he's like, but I just got the furniture remodeled. And she's like, no, but it doesn't matter, like, I still want to, I have bigger plans than Moya. My plans are bigger than you and bigger than all of this. And he just kind of like rubs the leather of the sofa, and it's like, well, okay, like, but I did remodel these. I like to think that Dargo had like a long trip to IKEA once he got settled on Moya and was like, all right, let's really, really just flip, make this a flip around.
Yeah. A flip around.
What is it called? Flip when you... around. What is it called?
It's flipping. It's house flipping.
Yeah, see, let's really flip this ship.
Yeah. That's his reality show.
Yeah, flip this ship.
I mean, part of the issue with Sokozu is just that we never really got much of a character out of Sokozu.
Not textually, at least.
Yeah. I mean, we can kind of... Just like the way that she was in Peacekeeper Wars, I think, drives home the fact that they really did not ever get to a place where they felt like they had a strong handle on Sokozu.
Yeah.
Because in Peacekeeper Wars, we commented on it, like, she barely speaks. And her main role in that movie is to surprise people with who she's siding with. And right. also to yell at people for being stupid.
Yes, exactly.
Those are the two things. But there is... There's something interesting in the idea of, like... So, Dargo Jewel was wonderful.
Yeah.
Like, that was a relationship that I really wanted to see more of. Because in, like, the second to last episode that Jewel was in, or even the last episode, there was drama about her essentially calling Luxon stupid.
Right.
And saying that her race was smarter. And there was tension there. And it brought... You know, it brought up this thing that... Some sci-fi shows just kind of take for granted that different species have different abilities or different propensities, and that's the way it is. And they don't always challenge right. that notion. And Farscape, I think, could have challenged that notion more often because it is a show about xenophobia. In one sense, it's about interacting with people of different worldviews, of different experiences than you. Yeah, so it could have used more of that, and I think that Dargo Jewel could have been a cool conduit through which to explore that. And Sokozu still has that piece where she thinks that she's smarter than everybody else, but she never had the humility of that Jewel had to be able to see, like, oh no, I messed up. Like, I'm wrong for doing what I just did. And the other thing about Dargo Sokozu is that they're both very strongly speciesist in terms of, like, fighting for their people.
Oh yeah, very good yeah. point.
So
very defensive of their people.
There's something there.
This is what I'm saying. All of these kind of work. The missing link is that nobody works with Stark. Sorry, buddy. Sorry, Paul no. Goddard.
What about Stark and Krace?
Okay, they hate each other a lot. Well, actually, this isn't going to be my third one. You don't get to take my third one. But Stark and Krace is Stark hates Krace. Krace doesn't know who Stark is. So Stark has this, like, 10-year vendetta of, like, I'm going to murder Krace. And then Krace is like, who are you again? Like, what? Why are you yelling at me? That's their relationship. My third pairing is... God, how hetero does it get? Rigel and Jewel. They're both from high cultures. They both think they're hot stuff. They're both not hot stuff.
Mm.
So it's the two of them, like, sitting on a beach. I like painting these, like, little scenes, by the way. It's like sort of small fan fiction. They're both sitting on a beach.
I keep forgetting that they're supposed to be kissing.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. That kiss. She's got a lot of crouching for her. That's why we've used Rigel twice, and his kisses are probably really difficult and smelly.
Sloppy.
Yeah. They're sitting on a beach, and everyone is like fighting some crazy dimension alien in the background, and they're just like, oh, Jewel, pass me the sunscreen. And she's like, get it yourself! And like yelling at him, and then he calls her a Trowk. And it just becomes them barking at each other, but then he calls her a Trowk, but then like they both bond. This is like the moment, right? Is they both like see someone else being stupid and they laugh at them together and make the other person feel bad. And you're like, ah, they're like cute together. They have a look to each other like, oh, you're also an asshole. I don't think Jewel is necessarily an asshole, but I think like early Jewel especially is just like, oh, everything sucks except for me, I'm good. Like early Jewel and Rigel is actually totally a cool pairing that never really got to see the light of day. What else do you want to talk about with characters? There's just really wanted to shout out the way that this show handles villains real briefly, because we never really got to talk about the progression from Krace being the you killed my brother, now you must die kind of villain, like the revenge villain, straight into the like I don't even care about that anymore, I just want you dead, to the like hard out of left field introduction of Scorpius and that escalation that we talked about a lot in season 2 of like we thought Krace was the big bad guy, but like this guy is like 10 levels of professional above him and way more scary and way more intimidating. Like the zooming out without having to actually do much scale changing of the show, like they don't have to show the Peacekeeper base for us to understand that Scorpius is a much more significant and dangerous and high powered villain than Krace was. Like that escalation is really clever. It uses writing to hint at something much larger than there was.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's also like Krace as a villain seeking revenge for his brother's death was never that interesting.
Yeah.
Krace as the fallen madman who was overwhelmed, like overcome by a stupid quest is interesting. So Krace kind of becomes a really amazing character when he gets Talon and he takes on a little more responsibility. Krace gets cool. The introduction of Scorpius is a watershed moment that I think really cements what Farscape can do. I think in many ways, Scorpius showing up at the end of season one ensures that like you're here, you're watching this show, and you're like, yes, this show can be everything that I need a show to be. He completes it. You can't have Farscape without Scorpius.
Yes, yes.
And that's because the most compelling antagonistic forces are forces that are a few things. They're born out of the quest that we're on. They are working towards the same goals that we are, and we could become that antagonistic force at any time.
Mm-hmm.
John and Scorpius are both scientists, right? They're both looking for a way to uncover and master the greatest mysteries of the universe.
Yeah.
And they want to do different things with that, but ultimately they are kind of working towards the same thing. And so that is what makes Scorpius a fantastic villain and what completes what the show is really about.
The phrase "you can't have Farscape without Scorpius" is incredibly on point. And the parallels between him and John are fantastic. Because, Krace is like not a villain to carry an entire show on. He just isn't. And that's why he has that like almost face turn. Is because they're like, we can't keep him in the background forever. We can't really kill him that way. He has to, like, do something or have a full arc. It feels like 3/4 of an arc. Scorpius is a character you could carry a whole universe on, both in his past and in the way he interacts with John and through Harvey, obviously. All of that stuff carries weight. And in a show about communication, you need a villain who can smart talk and use, like, his resources to get everything and use science to beat the scientist. I think that's like the most brilliant thing about the villains on the show is that they are not cackling psychopaths. They are very cool, very calm, very collected, very much leather daddies. Yeah, they're good. They're really good. And then briefly, last sort of like character tentpole that we've definitely talked about but haven't gotten to like get into is the whole like way this show handles gender, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
I think this stuff is really important. I find it very important, at least. And I think that it handles representation incredibly well for a show from the late 90s, early 2000s. In terms of the balance of like having good, strong women on there and Aaron's son being one of the best written women of all time on there.
And the Aaron John love story being one of the best written TV romances that I've ever seen.
Yeah. Easily.
Yeah.
And Chiana's whole backstory and with like Sikozy and Jewel. But and this was part of like a question, a part of a topic that somebody asked us to talk about. I believe it was Hugo, actually, who was like, what does it feel like to be the third character on the ship, or like the fourth one after like John and Dargo and Aaron? Like the shifting chair that is Zahn / Jewel / Sikozy is, I guess that's the fifth chair because you include Chiana. Point is, like, what does that character fill? And then it just kind of feels like it's the woman of the season. There's like pretty much a different one every season.
There's kind of two pieces here. There's gender, and it's like in the Aaron John sense, and then there's gender in the broader ship sense. And I think gender in the Aaron John relationship is handled pretty well. And there's an acknowledgement of like fluidity. And like power dynamics can shift and be balanced in different ways. And like, you know, a woman can be traditionally masculine and a man can be traditionally feminine and whatever. Like there's different I don't know what I'm saying.
No, you do. You got the idea, right? What you're getting at is like, that is what the John and Aaron relationship is about, is breaking down the notion that there has to be the man and then the woman.
Yeah,
but exactly. The role of the fifth woman person on the ship is just like a revolving door of the woman.
Yeah, well, because it's sort of a problem that emerges out of your protagonist being the man,
yeah.
Like the everyman man. Because then, okay, we've got our everyman man. Who are the big side characters we need? Well, we need him to have a best buddy, like a cool, muscular best friend. And we need him to have a woman that he's in love with, obviously. Like, we need those two characters. And so the cast fills in around that. And in, like, really, when you think about the composition of the crew, every character emerges out of a need to complement John in some way.
Yeah.
As much as we want this show to be a rich ensemble show, John is undoubtedly the center of the entire thing. And so you have, like, I feel like a character is cycled out narratively when they no longer really serve a purpose in John's story.
Right. Like, John doesn't need a mother figure like Zahn in season 4, you know?
Yeah.
He doesn't need a younger sister character like Jewel in season 4. And he doesn't need Sokozu in season 2 because he needs a mom figure. So it's totally like they fit the role that John needs when they're introduced and then are replaced, unfortunately, when they are no longer needed. So that's kind of our like thoughts on that. And I think that kind of gets at what we're saying. And then just this show has a lot of cool, interesting women on it. It also has a lot of like terribly handled gender politics here and there sprinkled about because it is dated in spots. Kubai Clam, ahem, ahem. People really don't like it when we poo-poo on Kubai Clam. There's like a couple people that are like, hey, come on.
Really?
Yeah, totally. There's people who don't think it's that bad.
I think it's the worst fucking episode of Farscape.
There you go. Well, he said down. The word.
I will not back down.
Oh my God.
I will not back down. John Crichton.
John Crichton, back me down. Oh, Scorpius.
Yeah, but I think one of the sad things about one of the things that I wanted to see out of Farscape that I think if someone made a Farscape show, Farscape-esque show today, first of all, they could very well make the protagonist a female character or just not a man, right? Yeah. But even if you were going to make it a man as the main character, having a strong female friendship in the show, I feel like is an indispensable element that Farscape just did not have.
It only hinted at them. We had Chiana and Jewel. We had Chiana and Sokozu almost. We had the moment where they fought together, but it was never, there wasn't like, there was not like a real sense of camaraderie there. It was more just like, I tolerate you after fighting with you for episode after episode. Now I kind of have a respect for you. And it wasn't enough of like, these are like, girls can just be friends. They don't have to fight. Like, it's true.
Yeah. I think Zahn and Aaron kind of were buds. There was like affection and respect. But
again, I think that was more of a motherly bond of like, Aaron respects Zahn for her faith kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Zahn appreciates Aaron's like strong headedness. And cute suits. What? Cute vests, I mean to say. Speaking of... I was going to say, like, speaking of vests, but I don't really know if this next listener wears vests. I have no idea. Let's take it to our next voice clip from an old friend, a good friend. It's the one, the only, everyone's favorite Church's song clip. It's...
Farscape is my rock. These characters are something I can always return to, and this community is something I can always feel safe in and comfortable in, no matter what's going on outside or just internally. And it's been a real, just wonderful experience being a part of this with everybody here. So I love you all.
Thanks, buddy. We are back. Thank you, thank you, thank you for that clip. That was a good clip. Solid, I'd say solid clip. Solid
great
10
clip.
Out of 10. Great clip.
Give it a five.
Next up, we're talking themes that we haven't already discussed into the ground. This first one is like in the inevitable like long essay that I'm going to write about Farscape. This is kind of where I want to like jump off of. This is my sort of like base point. Is this idea that the show is subversive. I don't think it at any point is a parody of other types of shows. I think it deals with comedy really well. I think it is almost 50% a comedy. It approaches that point. I think the stuff that is funny about it is very funny. But more than anything, it is a show that recognizes that the viewer is smart and intelligent and has watched other sci-fi programs and films.
Right.
It's chock full of film references. But that's why Crichtonisms are a thing. What was Matthew's version of Crichtonisms that was like way better? Oh, do you remember what it was?
No, I don't remember. It's like John. I think it was John. It had John in it. Or maybe.
Yeah.
Can I ask you guys one question before we go?
Yes, absolutely.
This is not this episode, but the previous one. How did you enjoy John's I'm an American speech?
Oh, we adored it. We read the whole thing.
Okay, good. I can't wait to see that. Because that is definitely far and away my favorite John Sequitur of the entire show.
John Sequitur.
Wow, that's like good.
That. Yeah. Oh.
Definitely, yeah. Like, in the highlight reel of the whole show.
Yeah, sure. I think I'm the only one who calls him John Sequiturs. Most people call him Crichtonisms, but I always like John Sequiturs a little better.
I like John Sequitur. I wish we had been using that. I like John
Sequitur. I've heard Crichtonisms before, but John Sequitur, that's a new one. That's a fresh one. Oh, it was good. Listen back to that. Matthew, I'm sorry. It was so good. You said it on the episode. Go listen to Matthew's... Where's the screwed episode? Yes. So those Crichtonisms are clearly like this show respects its like influences, but at the same time, it kind of like takes that and takes those characters and those expectations and then just like kind of throws them up in the air, especially with like season 3, which we talked about earlier. But it's subversive in interesting ways and in ways that don't feel like it's being mean or mean spirited to the things that came before it. It doesn't feel like it hates Star Trek. It feels like it came from a bunch of Star Trek nerds. You take Dargo, for example. This is a big reason why Dargo's, depending on the day you ask me, is probably my favorite character. Is he is the masculine type. He is the Commander Riker of the show, if you will. But Dargo also just wants to be a farm boy. Like, he also just wants to sit down and have a cry and watch a movie with the girl he loves before she's cheated on him with his son, who is terrible. Dargo is secretly just the, like, and we can't forget that in season 1 he mentions, I'm one of the teenagers of Luxens. Like, he's still just naive in a way and learning about the horrors of a lot of the world through this show, and grows up on the ship and comes to love Moya, and then when he eventually assumes the title of captain is, like, not the let's go out and kill things captain. He's definitely the, like, let's think things out and make the hard decisions kind of captain, because... He never slots right into the, like, actual... He never lives in the gruff, I'm the angry tough guy role. You know, when he does, it feels kind of awkward, but I don't think it happens enough to warrant it feeling generic. And then you have Erin, obviously, who is the tough woman but can also have a cry. You have John, who is the astronaut tough dude but who also talks it out and never pulls a gun out until he starts to lose his mind and then always pulls his gun out. every character has the, like, it's this thing but this. And that's kind of why we never like the episodes like the spider one from season 4, where it's like, here's your one thing that I'm going to take away from you. Because none of these characters are one thing. They are their archetype times minus one. They are the negative versions of their archetypes in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they always carry their otherness within themselves. Or they can't. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great thing to think about, because it also, Farscape is a show about these dualities, because it's all stems from this issue of the protagonist is from Earth. Like, he was shot through a wormhole to a crazy space town. And you don't usually have sci-fi shows where your protagonist is shot through a wormhole to crazy space town. Usually it's just, here we are, crazy space town, everything's normal, it's not crazy, because we live here. And because you have this protagonist who's outside of everything and is working on Earth references, Farscape is able to be a show where it's aware of what it's doing and it's like, whoa, this is weird, but also does stuff that's really weird, because it clears out of the way the stuff that is normally done in sci-fi shows, I guess. Because it builds this momentum of, like, this is weird, so, like, we can do other stuff that's really weird, too.
Right.
And then it also creates this is what I meant by duality, the duality of here and there. You always have a comparison point in your mind of, John is in space, how does it compare to what home was like? or what his preconceptions about space are. And it's a show about characters trying to get places. Everybody is trying to be somewhere other than where they are. Because in a show like Star Trek, right, it's their job, you know? They're on missions.
Right, no one's trying to leave.
Yeah. But in Farscape, I'm here. I shouldn't be here. I should be somewhere else. This is different than where I'm supposed to be because of XYZ.
Yeah. And the final Farscape connection for me is like, what this show has to say about xenophobia feels like a direct contrast to what so much of early like 70s and 80s sci-fi and Star Trek in particular had to say about Earth and what we could do. Because really, Star Trek is about a bunch of people who figured out how to run a perfect society and then said, let's go elsewhere and teach other people how to fix things and make their worlds better. Not like a perfect society, but they like went beyond need and went beyond greed and all of those like human flaws. And Farscape says, no, human flaws are all we have. And not only that, we're stuck with them and everyone else has them. Nobody's perfect in this world. We're all incredibly vulnerable and weak and prone to self-harm and xenophobia, as we see with all of the Earth episodes, and also just like the general theme of the show, and this idea that like there's no perfect society. Even the ancients, get one of them gets killed, and there's like one of them, and they take John to the ice planet, and it like doesn't work exactly right. Like there's no perfect race in Farscape. Everyone has their own like weird, horrible, crippling flaws, and you know that kind of gets at this like, what does the show have to say about different cultures? Are we putting different groups on pedestals because we want them to be better? Or is a show like Star Trek saying, hey, humans, maybe we can do this someday if we really figure it out? Kind of the like Isaac Asimov's foundation. Like, if we went beyond need, then we would really be kind of perfect. But this show kind of says, no, we need to accept our flaws and get past them.
Yeah.
And not try to eliminate them.
I think for me, the think piece that I want to write about Farscape has to do with the Americanness of it all, the sort of the grappling that it does with American exceptionalism, because what it's really saying, what Farscape is really trying to show, is that the thing that is exceptional about John as a person and his like, he's a red-blooded American and he's here and he's going to stir things up, but like the truly exceptional things that he does is trying to strike a compromise. And when you look at American history through the lens of compromise, you see that that's kind of like, I'm a history guy. That's why I'm going in this direction.
Yeah.
I was a history major. The country is founded on compromises, which in some cases were great, and in some cases were bonkers and nonsense. In some cases were bad compromises. But the thing that like makes America exceptional is not we are the best, we're the strongest, we're going to do better than everybody, we're going to go to space and conquer and be impressive and amazing. It's we got a lot of different people here who want a lot of different things, but we can figure out a way to talk it out and agree on ultimately how things are going to be run. Like, more or less, how are we going to live together? We can find a way to sit down and talk it out and come to some sort of understanding. And that's,
yeah,
in that way, I think Farscape is trying to redefine what are like the key important values of Americanness, and by extension of like global Earth society. What are like the best common values that we have that we can agree upon, so that when humanity is faced with this kind of reckoning, like having to go to space or something like that, we can look to these values and say, this is what we have, and we know that these values are going to guide us well. Farscape is trying to create that system of values and of common morals in a way that I think is really, really cool.
I'm like choking up a little bit, because these are things that are so important to me as a human being. And this show has more than any other instilled like a hope in me that like maybe we can have a John Crichton in our time who gets it and says, let's just go. Let's get out there and really just shake things up and talk to people who don't agree with us and go to space and realize beyond our potential that bickering and fearing what's different and what's outside it's not going to get us anywhere. It's going to slow us down. It's going to hinder us forever. And the only way for us to get to that like dream utopia, beautiful world that we want to get to is by inviting and accepting that which is different and getting over our history of that.
And it's going to be hard, and it's going to drive us kind of crazy. Like, it's going to be a really difficult thing to reckon with views that are different from ours. But at the end of the day, we have to. It's just the fact of the matter. Yeah, we have to. And it does present this hopeful vision, because when we go to Earth in season 4, you know, season 1, A Human Reaction, presents somewhat of a pessimistic view of how Americans would respond, or how people on Earth would respond to aliens showing up. Like, oh, we'd dissect them, we'd freak out, it'd be bad. But it also presents this hopeful side of everybody's looking for a home, everybody wants unity and acceptance, and John Crichton is somebody who can understand these aliens and want them to have a place where they can be at peace. So that hope for peace is present. And then later in season 4, when he goes to Earth, we see that everybody's fighting and America's trying to stake a claim on what John has found. And it's like, we're not sharing anything because 9/11 just happened and rah, it's a different world. But then when he comes back in bad timing, he's on the phone with his dad, and his dad's like, no, like, we're figuring it out. We got the crew together. We did it. We did what you wanted us to do. We sat down, we talked about
it.
It was hard, but we did it. And one day we're going to be able to get off this rock and go somewhere. Because, like, yeah, it's not the easiest thing in the world. But at the end of the day, if humans are good at anything, it's figuring out how to live together.
Frel, man. That about gets to it. Wow. Let's take a brief minute. Listen to one more. One more? No, we got our third.
Third, yeah.
Listener comment. It's from our buddy Hugo. Take it away, buddy.
Hey, everybody. Hugo, aka Leo Chris here, and I just wanted to say that my number one takeaway from Farscape as a whole is that it was a great sci-fi series with an epic scope that treated the viewers intelligently and rewarded them for paying attention to the world building and remembering the small details. There's never been anything else quite like it on TV. It gave us memorable characters too. Well, a lot of them, really, but I have to give a special mention to, you all know who I'm gonna say, don't you? Jewel. Anyway, take care.
Thank you, Hugo. Another great story about Farscape and your experience with it. Second to finally, we're going to talk about the whole show and how it relates to us. Because it's kind of impossible, if we're being honest with you, to start watching a show over a year ago and finish it like now and not have it in some way majorly affect your life. Like, yeah. Every week we've been watching Farscape. And when we have weeks off, it's like, no, now we're going to watch 3. So it kind of adds up to eventually basically having some Farscape every week. So I kind of want to start by asking you, Magellan, what does Farscape mean to you, and what you're taking away from it?
Yeah. I mean, I think I kind of started getting into it just now in our last segment a little bit. I think Farscape has kind of a timely significance and a timeless significance for me. The timely significance is, you know, it's the end of 2016. We're about to move into a country that I am fearful in some sense to be living in, because I don't necessarily see my values reflected in the people that are coming into power. And it seems to me that we are still legitimizing and turning a blind eye to xenophobia, to sexism, to a rejection of those who are other than us. But also, broadly speaking, like, in our time right now, there's just more and more fracturing around. This is something that we talked in person about with one of our friends the other day. There's more and more fracturing around. People are sticking with the people who agree with them and not necessarily communicating with people who disagree with them. And this is across the board, both sides of the aisle, both sides, like, everywhere, everybody. And Farscape is a show that very clearly says that's not going to work. Right. You have to throw yourself into situations where you don't know the rules, you don't really know what's going on, you don't know what everybody thinks or why everybody thinks what they do. You have to be able to throw yourself into those situations and go a little crazy, but get through it. Like, we have to be able to talk to each other, and we have to be able to accept people who are outside of ourselves, because we're going to have to deal with those people existing sooner or later. And so I think Farscape for me is just, like, beautifully models how to be somebody who is okay with not understanding, very confidently accepting that there are things that you don't know, there are things that you still need to learn, and there are people worth knowing and worth loving who are outside of your sphere of comfort.
Exactly.
So that's kind of the timely piece of it. I guess that's moving into the timeless side of it too. I think the thing that I'll take away from Farscape for me, like, I'm a sucker for a nice, sweet romance. And I think you really cannot say enough. You really cannot praise enough the John Aaron relationship. I think it's a truly beautiful piece of work. And they kind of shortchanged us in season four a little bit with the weird stuff that they were doing with Aaron's son as a character, which disappointed me. But, you know, season one and season two and season three, I mean, the first three seasons of the show, they gave us so many moments of like true, genuine, bare, earnest, honest communication and connection between these two people. There was just such a clear sense that they understood each other and accepted each other, and that every move forward was natural and right. And there is such a sense that they are, you know, they're scared and they're nervous, but they're fully sharing control and trusting one another in a way that's really, it's really good to see. And I think, I guess what I'll take away from that is just the confidence that it's okay to, like, I don't know, that it's just, it's, you can roll with it and you can, like, you can have that kind of a connection with somebody where you can both really get each other and really understand, like, what the relationship is about. You can fully trust somebody and, like, respect them and not have to hide anything or hold anything back. Because, you know, what you see in Aaron and John is that they fully let themselves be themselves around each other.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. So I think it's something that I have to think more about, how to kind of communicate what I mean. But there's just something about the Aaron John relationship that's really comforting and really hopeful. And I think I kind of put it into words when we were talking about bad timing and this idea of, like, they're together and that's something that's lasting. Like, that truly is a love and a respect and an admiration between the two of them that will outlast any difficulties or setbacks. And it's a love that feels far more real than pretty much any other love I've seen rendered on screen.
Absolutely. I love Aaron and John. That's totally the thing that'll last. And it is unparalleled in TV relationships how good their back and forth is and their development, warts and all, I think. So you can even say, like, the bad stuff in season four is, like, part of a bad phase of a relationship.
Yeah.
Just for me, it's, this show taught me to feel a lot more than I did for a while, and to embrace emotions. That's, like, why I talk so much about the relationships on the show and the way that its characters are expressive and why the characters matter, is because at the end of the day, all we want to do is see people on television, like, feel things, because we don't always have the events in our life or the things going on in our life to feel what they do. So it's empathy and it's understanding of other people, and it's this ability to say, yeah, I am who I am, but I also feel differently than I ever have before. This is a new feeling. Like, I'm scared of something I've never been scared of before. I'm seeing these new people and I don't know how to react, but I'm gonna learn. And, like, that, like you said, is so important in today's world. And one more time, I go back to characters like Dargo, who wear their pride on their sleeves and will take a bullet for people who matter to them. And Dargo's death at the end of the day is basically the culmination of that, and saying, yeah, I felt so much that I was willing to sacrifice my physical self for my feelings and for the people that I love and care about. We needed to have that sacrifice in the show at the end of Peacekeeper Wars. It needed to happen. And it's mostly just that. And it's everything you said. I can't emphasize all that stuff enough. But, like, listen to people that disagree with you. And don't be afraid to feel the stuff that feels uncomfortable in your head or sounds weird. You are not. Sometimes the weirdest weirdos and the goofiest clowns at school end up going on the coolest adventures. Being a nerd is fun. If you're an astronaut, then you might go to space and see things that'll change the way you think. The space program is worth holding on to. Like, all of these things that I can't emphasize telling my children and telling people that listen to this and just telling whoever will listen to enough. I recounted a story to Magellan recently about in the evening of Christmas of this year, actually, after at the Christmas party that I was at, after everyone had pretty much left, I was left sitting alone down in the family friend's basement, basically, with one of their kids, who is an 8-year-old girl, and she was watching a cartoon with me, and one of the characters had like a cool spaceship, and she turned to me and she said, "Alan, I have a lot of questions about space." And y'all, I'm very honest about when I do legitimately cry. I didn't legitimately cry. I came so close, because this is a person who I really need to have her grow up in a world where we have those questions and we don't stop asking them. Even if it's just physics, even if it's just, she asked me, like, what does water look like when it floats in space? And it's like, oh, you're asking the right things. Like, you're thinking the right thoughts. This is how we get to Farscape. This is how we get to the wormhole program and all of that stuff. It is the only way that we advance, is by asking those questions. And Farscape tells us that it's okay to ask those questions, and you're not a bad person for being curious. You know, at the end of the day, that's what we need to do. Mm-hmm. Angela, Angela, won't you please tell us a story about what you thought of Farscape?
Hello, Alan and Magellan. It's Angela. I am both excited for you, too, that you are getting to Peacekeeper Wars, but I'm also sad that your discussion about Farscape is coming to a close. But I am very pleased and delighted that I found you, and I've been able to listen every week as you discuss my favorite television show. I wanted to give you a little history. I was introduced to Farscape back when it was airing, back in season 2. I think it was maybe 2000 or 2001. A coworker of mine, he knew that I liked science fiction, so he said, "Hey, you should check out this show. It's kind of weird, but I think you'll dig it." So I found it. It was the episode I watched was Picture If You Will, that stupid Maldus episode where everyone gets sucked into that picture that keeps changing. That is by far the worst episode of Farscape. But anyway, so I saw that episode. I thought my coworker was nuts, and I went back to work and I said, "Dude, come on. I thought you thought better of me than this." And he apologized. He knew it was a sucky episode. So I stopped watching it. He encouraged me to give it another try. So later in the year, I tried it again, and it was the same episode. So I completely washed my hands of it. I was like, "This show is dumb. I'm not going to watch it." Until about 3 years ago, I had 2 weeks off for Christmas, and I was house-sitting, and I wasn't traveling. I was just staying at home with this dog, taking care of somebody's house. And I thought, I wonder if that show with the living spaceship is on Netflix. At the time, it was. So I completely mainlined the whole series in 2 weeks. It was an incredible feat. I can't believe I did all 4 seasons in 2 weeks, but I did, and I was completely addicted. I have to tell you, I'm a lifelong Trekkie. I grew up watching Star Trek. Love it. It has a very special place in my heart. But Farscape, it's just better. The Trekkies I know are going to crucify me for this, but it's just better. Not just better sci-fi, it's better television. I can't say enough about it. And those who don't know it, they won't know it until they know it. But thank you, boys. It's been a delight listening to you on my commute every week or every so often. I'm always excited when a new episode pops up in my feed. So I wish you both the best, and I will continue to follow all of your escapades as long as I can. Take care, boys.
Thank you, Angela. Now, once again, we're going to cut again real quickly back to Alan, to the very last Moya bag. Oh my God, we're going to close it up for good. See ya, be right back. Hello, everyone. This is Alan, bringing you the final Moya bag for episode 51 of Scape Chats. Yes, that's right. It's the last one. Not to say that we're going to be done talking about shows after Farscape, or that we're going to be done reading commentary and emails and comments like that, but as it is referred to as the Moya bag, this is the big finale. So I'm going to do everyone a nice favor, and I'm going to read all the comments as usual. Probably not in their entirety, because I know that that's fun for me, but not everyone likes to hear that. But it's all there. And I think we've put ourselves out there enough at this point with 51 episodes of this lovely show that the Moybag just seemed like such a natural extension of our whole idea that we want to be open and honest and talk about this show as collectively as we can, because the Farscape community is amazing. I've said it a million times before, and I still mean it. So with that in mind, we're going to start with our Twitter account, @ScapeJats, and the replies that we received there. First off, we have a picture from user Vanover Patricia, recurring commenter, who is linking to their favorite scene from Peacekeeper Wars, which is the scene of Aaron giving birth. And then saying, of course their kid would be born in the midst of a battle, and she insists that they get married at the same time. Who else would do that? That's Aaron's son for you. Wants the baby to be born in a fight. Wants the baby to be born in the worst conditions of all time. And yet also, we should get married. So thank you, Patricia. We also got another comment from Angela Scrangela.
My name is Angela. Hey, hello.
Who hilariously says, so do you guys just naturally say tattoo now? And then, yeah, I don't know how to turn that off. I don't know how to say the other word. Tattoo? Tattoo? Yeah, that's it. That's the only way to say it. It's the way that Anthony Simcoe says it, and thusly, that's the way I want to say it. And then also, this was just a tweet that she sent out. Another reason I love Scape Chats. They break into a High School Musical song while watching Farscape, and then go back and sing more later. The High School Musical is, for my and Magellan's specific generation of people, such a weird, specific cultural touchstone that so many people watched. Mostly just all of those Disney Channel original movies, but specifically High School Musical, because it launched the career of Zac Efron and Vanessa Hudgens. It was such a big idea, but it was a weirdly big deal, right? Because you didn't think about it that much, but it was like, oh, it's one of these things that everyone's seen. And I remember a lot of people referencing it in our high school. So yeah, that's just one of those things that's burned in our brains, weirdly enough. And then finally, as we started teasing out what the next show we're going to watch is going to be and how we're sad to be done with Scape Chats, we got a reply from our sister podcast over at the Farscape Friday show saying that they'll miss us. And Kane Taz, when I do have time to listen to y'all, I love your commentary. And if people want to hear more Farscape talk that's like contemporary and being done today, then go listen to the Farscape Friday podcast, because they're like somewhere in the middle of season 2 right now, and so they have a long ways to go doing one episode a week. But yeah, and they rule also. They're very cool on like Tumblr and on Twitter and stuff. They're just a very good time. And then, yeah, I put out a hint for what the next show is going to be on Twitter. You're going to find out at the end of the second half of this episode, so I'm not going to say it right now, but I will say that I think a lot of you are going to like it. I genuinely do, and I hope to gosh that you will stick with us and watch it with us, because it's a show that's near and dear to my heart, and I really want to talk about it with more of the internet, just like Farscape. So, now, thank you for all those tweets. You can reach us at Scape Chats for the indefinite future. I'm going to be keeping that account up if you ever want to talk about Farscape with some boys. And back to the Farscape subreddit, where we first found our legs and our first couple of listeners, and like half of our guests, to be honest with you, came from the Farscape subreddit over at reddit.com/r/farscape. A lovely long comment from Johnny Fogg, who says, funny how I'm rewatching this, referring to Peacekeeper Wars, after seeing Rogue One. I've not been too keen on the space opera aspect of season 4, but I have to admit the space ground battles are well done. Farscape had the balls to try and upstage Star Wars, and I like how easily Scorpius slides into the role of field commander. Yeah, it seems like when push comes to shove, Scorpius knows how to shoot a gun, basically, and lead a group of people. A long time ago, someone on a forum compared this movie... Whoa, this is weird. A long time ago, someone on a forum compared this movie to the OJ civil trial. It's closure, but it ain't real justice. It's hard to find resolution for Crichton and Aaron, let alone the supporting players. That's an interestingly charged description, and also, like, very dated to when the show came out. I was a baby when the OJ trial happened, if you want to age me a little bit, but I remember hearing about it even, and yeah, that idea that it's like not real justice, I guess, to some people is very, very valid. So you do you. Lux and paratroopers are awesome. What was the point of bringing Stalik to meet Einstein? I think the answer to that question is Crichton wanted Einstein to be the one to tell Stalik, hey, we can't give you wormhole info. It's not going to work. It's sort of like when you like get something from someone who's stronger than you, like, or like a parent or something, and then someone else wants it and you have to tell, like, you have to go to the parent and say, hey, can they have it, even though you know they're gonna say no. I don't know if that comparison makes any sense, but it does in my head, so take that. So Kozu is a triple agent or something? I don't care, says, or I don't, Freling, no, says Johnny Fogg. Gigi has the opposite problem as Claudia. She's playing a mostly underwritten character who only comes alive when she's in Dargo's orbit. I would disagree with that. The upside is her last scenes are really remarkable. She does the high-pitched yelp thing in season 4 when she's threatened, and here she uses it to express grief before she tries to slug Rigel. Aaron, by comparison, becomes less interesting as she grows more domestic with John. Again, I kind of disagree. She gets a good one-liner about shooting things while John is in labor, while she is in labor, rather. And her freakout when John collapses is great. Goes on to quote, "Ya big upright iguana," which is, I think, is that a Crichtonism? Or a John sequitur, as Matthew would call it? I'm not sure. Graza still sucks and makes no sense, but I'll admit it gives her a nice motivation for a truce of the end, referring to the baby that she inexplicably has. And then Trelandis replies, "Hey, Graza is a really complicated character. Hashtag 50 Shades of Graza." Matthew, don't quit your day job. Shattered underscore Cloud replies, "I think the Farscape series and PK Wars had different purposes. The Farscape series was about play and adventure and exploration and ultimately exploring what it means to be human. Emotions like hope and that instinct do have to go when it seems impossible. It's only when something is surrounded by difference that it can easily be defined. The PKW, however, was about bringing the series to an end. When you think about it that way, it happens. What the things that happen in Peacekeeper Wars make much more sense." Sorry, I'm stumbling a lot. "I think that meeting with Einstein was more for Crichton's sake." Yeah, so this agreeing with what I was saying. Einstein tells him he cannot create the ultimate weapon with what they gave him. Not only does this notify the Scarrans, but also gives John release from all that he has been running from. I think Chiana's storyline was dominated by the events related to Dargo later on in the series, but she still held her own. Yay! Agreement. In Peacekeeper Wars, I thought her character felt really distant and almost like an extra rather than an integral character. But now that you have made me reflect on it, I think that by having more of a focus on her in regards to Dargo, it added to the tragedy of an ending part where that thing happened. Fake Joffy was just insulting. They could have at least tried to get someone of similar stature or just anyone else. I mean to think Chiana would betray Dargo for that weasel, ha! I know the actor that played original Joffy has had issues, so I always assumed that the change was last minute and desperate. Graza was always weird. When Magellan and I read this comment, we did not realize that the actor who played Joffy was not the one in Peacekeeper Wars, but now it makes so much more sense that his costume was like dramatically different and his face looked a little different. It was a different actor. You're right, because as we mentioned way back in the day, the actor who played Joffy got into some life issues at the time, after the show, I think. That might have been more recent, but I don't really know what he had going on in life. Point is, weird thing to pick up on, but good job. I skipped a paragraph here. Aaron grew from a rule-following perfect soldier to a free-willed, loving wife and mother that fought for all she loved. She was the most interesting investigation into what it means to be human, humane, into humanity, because she looks human but isn't. She grew more human as the series progressed. Her character in Peacekeeper Wars cemented that transformation well. And finally, in regards to justice, Farscape was a beautifully crafted, thought-provoking romp of fun balls. Good wording. A forced ending was a travesty against the art of good sci-fi and good cinema. Thanks for your thoughts. Wow. Good comment from Shattered Cloud. Killing it. To which Johnny replied some back and forth about character arcs. And finally, the last comment, the end of the Moe bag. It's one more ride from our buddy Blue Blaze Spear. I'm blue. I'm sort of surprised there was any debate as to whether links to the podcast should be here or not. It's one of the scant few resources of having active discussions about Farscape. It's kept me coming back here on a weekly basis because it's given me a reason to discuss this show in a way that I haven't had the opportunity to do in many years. And I will say to that, first of all, I don't mean to keep throwing the moderators under the bus and say, like, we almost got kicked off. I just remember one of them in particular mentioning, like, hey, we had the conversation or someone told me, like, should we delete this? And then they said no. So the moderators are totally on our side. And this subreddit is the reason the Moe bag exists. And yeah, we've talked about this before, but I wanted the subreddit to have more discussion of the episodes, and the other podcasts aren't doing threads, so I figured, hey, let's get you a thread to talk about the show. But at the same time, I don't know what people on the subreddit want, because these posts always get fun, great, interesting comments, but the stuff that gets upvoted the most is stuff like the GIF that I made of the monster walking into the club from Meltdown. So, the internet is dumb, is what I'm saying. I don't know what the podcast's next incarnation will look like, but I'll be interested in hearing about it. If you're mulling things over and you're trying to avoid being pigeonholed into sci-fi, a show I was thinking about is The Wire. Farscape, it's one of those shows that's been out for a while, and everyone's always saying it's a must-watch, but I've managed not to watch it yet, and the last time I saw it, it was still on Netflix. Is The Wire on Netflix? Is it on US Netflix? These are the questions that I have for you, because I'm used to thinking that HBO shows do not go on Netflix, but I do know that The Wire is on Instant Video, so... Yeah, The Wire is not on US Netflix. I just confirmed that as I said that out loud. But it's on Amazon Instant Video. Yeah, so we could theoretically watch that. It's not the one that we picked next. Sorry, Blue Blaze Spear, but we'll add it to the pile of shows that we want to watch. Because I've always wanted to watch The Wire too. It's totally one of those, like, the shows, you know? If you decide to go back into sci-fi, I'm going to throw Babylon 5 at you again. Just another defense post of Babylon 5. We're not going to watch it. We're not going to watch it. I'm sorry. Maybe someday. Maybe definitely not for a show. It's just it's not the undertaking we're looking to do right now. I understand you're debating with keeping the same feed. It's a hobby that people do for the love. Love aside, I understand trying to mitigate costs. And yeah, it's not just a cost thing. We talk about it at the end of this episode, but keeping the podcast on the same feed is going to turn this podcast feed into a chats feed and not just Scape chats. So that stuff will always be there for archival purposes, but also we want to branch out into doing different types of chats shows. Either simultaneously or with different hosts, or just kind of like, you know, if you've listened to the podcast Worst Idea of All Time, it's the same two hosts doing different movies every year. Grant, fantastic podcast, very recommended, but, you know, that's one feed, and they've been running that for, I think, like 3 or 4 years at this point. I don't know. But point is, there are examples out there of shows that are doing a similar thing to what we're doing in terms of, like, weekly discussion, but all on the same feed, so I think there's precedent. Oh, right, Farscape. Going back to Blue Blaze's comment. The miniseries was the ending it needed. It had all the necessary beats and wrapped up everything in a satisfying way. I regret that for me, the whole proceeding was haunted by the ghost of a fifth season. But it had everything I needed, and I wasn't left forever with John and Aaron being a pile of bath salts. Good one. When I talked about wanting more from the miniseries, I think that was me trying to shake off that fifth season specter. In the run of the show, I griped about the times where it spun its wheels and didn't use the best pacing. In this miniseries, things sort of swung the other way. I wanted them to be able to let moments linger and let the characters, and by extension, us, have moments to contemplate and let the new status quo sink in. That was a hard thing for me to accept over the course of the Peacekeeper Wars, that the status quo was so often in flux. We didn't have time to accept a blind Chiana or the cat-eyed Chiana we ended up getting. Sokozu flipped sides so many times that I'm not even sure she knew what side she was on. And we didn't get to sit with that thought either. It was out of necessity, but I feel like the miniseries didn't have enough time. How appropriate is that, though? Like, ultimately, isn't so much of the tragedy of Farscape about not having the time to do what you want? I think that's appropriate. Sort of like how we justify the end of the show. I think you can do the same thing with Peacekeeper Wars. Dargo's death felt almost necessary within the context of what was happening, and it was a perfect death for his character. He had moments with his bro and his gal, and then he got to go out in a blaze of glory. But man, was there a part of me hoping he was alive. Same. Then the planet got swallowed by a wormhole, and I thought, well, Frel. I often think about the last issue of the Farscape magazine, in which David Kemper wrote a non-canon story that took place well into the future, and Dargo was still alive with a bionic arm. What? But it was written well before the miniseries, and I believe Aaron's son in that story was named JT. That sounds amazing. Somebody send me the Farscape magazines. Thanks. Or tell me where I can find them. Almost to the end here, folks. I know you guys wondered how close this would have mapped to a fifth season. David Kemper mentioned that the fifth season opening would have been completely different because John's mission would have been different. His drive to go home had come and gone. Now it would have been about Crichton protecting his family in the midst of increasing hostilities. I think we got something that was pretty close. Yeah, there's clearly the... Like, if you were really to analyze Peacekeeper Wars as a singular work, there's, like, themes of fatherhood and family and throughout that line up with what a whole season could have been. And then... Our last paragraph here. I never know how much I should talk about the comics because of what they are. While they're technically canon, there's a lot of people who will never attempt to go read those stories. The Peacekeeper Wars wrapped up things nicely, but there are still plenty of fun stories out there to tell. We get to see Scorpius be his devious, conniving self and see him commit his arguably most heinous act, That's very interesting. We get another Crackers Don't Matter-like story. We get an unrealized reality where Zahn and Darko are still alive and with an Aaron that never met John. And we get the Kokori invasion. Man, did Farscape have some stories to tell. That is a weirdly perfect note to end on, actually. Thank you, Blue Blaze Spear. I always loved your comments. And now that I'm realizing it, we are going to have a comment thread for this episode. But I don't think we're going to do a Moya back on it, like in terms of me recording audio with music and stuff. I'm just going to reply to those comments in the thread. So everyone will hop on over to reddit.com/r/farscape this week if you want to have one final chat about the show. And I think it's time to close this bag up. Oh, it made a popping noise at the end. I guess it's closed and we can't open it anymore. There's no more stuff inside the Moya bag. Let's put it back inside Moya along with all of our weird space friends. And let's say goodbye to Farscape with Alan and Magellan. And we will see you next week. Happy 2017. We're back. And that, folks, was Scape Chats. Ugh. Put a bow on it, wrap it up, send it out there to the world, share it with your friends, share it with the whole Farscape community, introduce new people to the show, the TV show, and then also show them our podcast. It started out a little rough, but I feel like we really found our footing and we had a good foundation from the start. And we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for all of the Scuppies. Every one of you. Mm-hmm. We just spent a little bit before this recording going back and reading the old Reddit threads when people were saying, should we delete this for self-promotion? And then they kind of kept us up there because not enough people are talking about this show, to be honest with you. It's too good to be neglected. I want to do a couple shout-outs as we go into our last housekeeping segment. Of course, shout-outs to all of the other Farscape podcasts. Farscape Friday podcast, Kay and Taz, lovely people. Keep up the good work every week, still cranking through the show. What's the other one? That's the main one that I really like. The Frellcast. Y'all are all over Twitter and you sound really good. And I like the dynamic you have on your show. It's kind of fun. Scapecast. You were there before a lot of us were and really kind of nailed it from the start. And every other Farscape podcast and Farscape discussion forum out there. Y'all are all beautiful, wonderful people. And we love you. And we wouldn't have done this if it wasn't for you. In regards to what we're going to be doing from here, though, we are not done talking about television. We're going to watch another show. We've talked about it for a while. We've planned it for a while. And I think, Magellan, I think we finally landed on a new show.
Yeah, I think we know what we're talking about. Next, do you want me to say yeah, or do you want me to say what the show is?
How about I'll tee it up for you. Magellan, we love characters here on Scape Chats. I almost forgot what it was called. Jesus.
Boy howdy.
We love characters. We love music. And we love emotions. Like I was talking about earlier. Hey, there's the segue. Magellan, what's our next show?
Well, let me tell you. You want a show that combines characters, emotions, and the other thing that you said? Your music. You're going to get it. It's a show called Freaks and Geeks.
And then I play a little bit of the Freaks song right there. Haha, gotcha.
What? Oh, guys? Freaks and Geeks? That's not a space show. All right, here's the
deal.
We kind of want to do, we want to do something that's like, now for something totally different. I've never watched Monty Python, I'm sorry, I don't know what the phrase is.
You're close enough.
Yeah, on the money. We want to do something that's pretty different. So we wanted a show that's like a lot shorter, that is in a totally different setting, tonally is different. So we're trying it out. We both have, I think, seen Freaks and Geeks before, right?
Correct.
But we're going to endeavor to have guests on from like our lives who have maybe not seen the entirety of Freaks and Geeks so we can maintain that element of like new people watching the show. And we also, I haven't seen it in years. It's been like a long time since I've seen it anyway.
Yeah.
But we're still going to do two episodes a week. So for the next like 2.5 months we're talking Freaks and Geeks, and then we'll move on to something else. But we figured this would be a nice shorter show, I guess. I don't know what we call these chunks, but I guess a shorter show where we can kind of get into like who we are a little bit more and kind of touch base with us as Freaks and Geeks before we keep on trucking through other beloved pop culture TV shows.
Right, we didn't get to be self-indulgent enough when we talked about Farscape and how we get to bring ourselves in and bring on our fellow freaks and or geeks. I'm really excited about this project. I know a lot of people are definitely going to think like, well, I thought you were going to do another sci-fi thing. But like we said, embrace things that are different. And that's kind of what we had going on when we picked this show over the many, many other shows that we considered. I watched it for the first time and only time back in 2010. I have a lot of history with this show from that time of my life. I'm sure Magellan does as well. It's really interesting if you haven't watched it before. It's all on Netflix. It's 18 really good episodes. There are no bad, I don't think, actually I shouldn't say that. I'm pretty sure there are no bad episodes of Freaks and Geeks. All on US Netflix. All very easy to access. Yet another show that was gone too soon. Probably could have gone on a lot longer, but definitely it used its time wisely and it ended well. Like, they knew they were ending, at least. So if you're worried about like, oh, we're getting another show with like a sad, tragic ending that goes into a movie. Nope. Freaks and Geeks begins and ends really well, in fact.
Yeah.
Now,
in terms of housekeeping, our kind of internet housekeeping here, this feed is still going to be the feed where we do our shows. Reason for that, there is kind of poetic sense in like ending Scape Chats and then its own thing, Frozen and Carbonite, in its own feed. There is like a nice image to that, but we don't want to pay the money to keep a feed alive that we're not using when we can just continuously use the same feed. So this, if you're subscribed to us or you listen on Simplecast, it's going to be the same RSS feed, the same spot. We're just going to call it, it's called Chats now. I don't think we've like sorted out whether we're going to change the name to the current show every time or just call the whole thing Chats, whatever. But we're going to have a new email address, new Twitter handle, which I guess I can say now because we'll have changed it by the time this comes out. The new email is going to be chatspod, chatzpod, @gmail.com for the email. And the Twitter will be @chatspod. So that's kind of the new brand that you can search for, chatspod.
It'll be the same Twitter account that will change names. The email account, scapechats@gmail.com, will live on. We don't have to pay for that. So if you ever want to email a Farscape podcast, and the Tumblr will stay the same too.
Yeah.
So those free services will stay where they are, you know.
And there's still a chance that we might return and do other Farscape related episodes, and it would just like the next Farscape related episode we do would be Scape Chats 52, and it would still be on the same feed.
Right.
Because maybe at some point we'll want to dive into the comics, or we'll want to like redo episodes on early episodes to kind of revisit them, or we might want to, play the game, or like have an episode that's focused on a specific topic that we saw a lot of interest in. There's still a chance that we'll like talk about Farscape more, and that would also be on this feed. But our idea is that we watch a show, we're done, we're going to watch another show, that's done, we're going to keep watching new shows, and they're all going to be in this place as chapters in our kind of podcast journey.
The chat's journey. So if you like listening to us, then stay subscribed. And if you don't like listening to us, why did you make it this far? Think you hit all of the main beats? I know that some people definitely said they're interested in sticking around for the new show. We haven't locked down a name yet. We will obviously have locked down a name when we pull out the first episode, which will be 2017. Freaks and Geeks, honestly, is such a good early year show. Just like new year, new show. It's short, like I said, and we're doing two episodes a week. So should we tell them which ones to watch, what they're called, and kind of do that whole song and dance again real briefly?
Yeah, you know where we can go?
John, where can we go?
Well, We gotta hop in our spaceship one last time.
Maybe the spaceship is consistent and we stay in the spaceship between shows.
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
Mm-hmm.
I literally just opened Netflix and typed planet into the search bar thinking that I was going to be searching for planet Netflix.
No, you already found it. It's right here. Whoosh, we landed.
Whoosh. Oh, I thought this place was destroyed.
Haha, the barren ruins hold one more secret.
It's still here. Man. Next week, we are beginning, I'm just going to say Freaks Chats, and we can talk about it off mic. First episode of Freaks Chats. We're watching two episodes. The first is Freaks and Geeks episode 1, pilot episode. Studious mathlete Lindsay starts hanging out with a group of burnouts, worrying her parents. Lindsay's brother Sam struggles to confront a bully.
This episode is heavy, and I watched this one. I haven't watched the second one yet, so spoilers. This one's like pretty heavy, and if you had like a rough time in high school, this whole show is gonna fuck you up. And I can say the F word now because we're done. It's gonna fuck you up a lot. And it's one of those shows where all the characters start out as archetypes and then they get filled in as the show goes on. So if you're like, oh, these are all generic, I promise you, it gets way more like intense and they're all like very complex characters. So pilot episode, it's a fun one.
Episode 2, Beers and Weirs. With her parents out of town, Lindsay throws a party at the house to impress Daniel. Wary of alcohol, Sam's friends replace the keg with fake beer.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's a fun one. Yeah. I will say I'm going to miss reading Farscape episode summaries and just being like, wow, what? What could that possibly look like?
Right, exactly. Oh, man, it's just there's all these things that we don't realize. And this is for anyone who does a podcast, like how many things you start to rely on once you do a show weekly, like that are just going to exist forever. Like when Farscape went off of Netflix, that was like a big difficulty for us for a little while. Or like, the wiki, like, is there a good Freaks and Geeks wiki, or like, is there a good trivia? Do I have to seek that stuff out?
Think about it.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go, do we say next week? We might not be able to get this out in a week after this one, just to be honest with you.
I think we can do it.
You think we can do it? Okay.
Yeah.
Screw it. Let's do it.
Screw it.
Screw it, Magellan. Just screw it up. Just screw me up, Doc. Thank you so much, dear listener. This has been Scape Chats for one last time somewhere in the universe.
And then we began our new chats journey kind of today. We watched the first half of the Farscape pilot. That show fucking rules. It's really well, it has such a cool world. It's so like Mass Effect, Star Wars, Star Trek. It's like a mishmash of all of my favorite sci-fi universes and stories. There you go. Words are hard. Because it's got this, like, you know, a stranger in a strange land, but at the same time, the beginning of the show, when he's on the space station, getting on the ship, is in the future. So then he goes through a wormhole and just goes into the, like, alien world. So you're like, is he going further into the future, or is he just going to a world that he's never seen before? I think stuff like that will be answered soon. My only worry about the show, just to get this out of the way, is that it feels like it's going to get really dense mythology-wise, or like names-wise. Like, there are moments where people just spout names, and you're like, I don't know what any of these things are. But it's got a fantastic main cast. Just from the get-go, you just fall in love with people immediately. And it's got a good like tone and color palette and stuff like that, things that I like about my sci-fi. And we didn't finish the first pilot, and we also need to watch the second episode this week to, you know, get started on our two episodes a week thing, and then record a podcast, I guess. But I liked it, yeah. I want to see where it goes. I want to see how it settles into a groove. I've heard that the first season's not great, but since we're already enjoying it, I feel like we're on track to love this show. So it's going to be an interesting year, and I think it's important that I got to talk about this in my diary as an archive now for when we finish and I can listen back to this. I don't know anything about it. I like the blue-haired lady, the bald blue lady. Magellan likes the sexy Australian chick. And Rockne S. O'Bannon is the greatest name for a show creator of all time. And that's my Farscape little spiel.